You're listening to Authorpreneurs Unleashed with host Catherine McClatchy, demystifying the business of writing. Hi everyone, I'm JoLynn Elkins, producer of Authorpreneurs Unleashed. Have you heard email marketing for authors carries a return on investment twice that of SEO or keyword advertising? And there are almost twice as many people using email as those on Facebook? Today, I'm interviewing digital marketing specialist Catherine McClatchy to learn how we can better use this powerful tool in our author business to build community and increase sales. Join us. Let's get started on unleashing the perfect email strategy. So, Catherine, in past episodes, you've said that if you can only do one thing marketing-wise, it should be newsletters. Why is that?
Absolutely. Email marketing is, number one, the most accessible, and the current numbers show over 5 billion people on the planet have access to an email address. That's more than social media. That's more than all the other marketing things combined. Email marketing also has, by far and large, the best ROI, return on investment. So for, depending on what research you're looking at, the most conservative says for every $1 you invest in email marketing, you're going to make 38. The research I follow says it's higher than that. It's actually $1 to $44.
Wow.
So if you're looking at straight up cost, and that also affects your time commitment, if you're going to be writing things, do it as a newsletter. It's also about permission-based marketing. The folks that signed up for your email list have given you permission to contact them and to share your value, be it what you're offering, your services, your books, your knowledge, your resources. They want to hear from you. So that's one of the things that really drives it. Mm-hmm. And the sales show. So if your objective is sales, newsletter is the way to go. If your objective is building a community, newsletter is the way to go, because the interaction with newsletter, if you do it right, is way better than what you're going to get on social media or any other channels.
Well, there's no way to just click like on a newsletter if you're going to interact. How do people interact with a newsletter?
That's the thing. You have to make sure you're not using it as a one-way bulletin. You know, back in the day when we were mailing out, okay, I'm showing my age, but I started with newsletter marketing back when you had to put labels and stamps on envelopes and take them to the post office, right? So back in the day, you might have people that would send you a note back or send you a check with an envelope back. Today, you get it so much easier for them to hit reply. So if you're building your content in your newsletter to where it's asking questions and it's conversational and you're encouraging interaction, you're going to get those replies and you're going to build much tighter relationships with people than if you just do the buy my book, or if you approach your newsletter or your email as a one direction info dump. You need to make sure that it's conversational, because that's what's going to make people feel like they're part of your community, part of your team, part of your VIP fan base. And that's how I encourage everybody to treat their newsletter. Your email list, those are your VIPs. Oh. Those are the people that have given you permission to come into their inbox every week, month, whatever it is that you committed to do.
Not only have they asked for your information, they're far more likely to want to engage with you than a rando on a social media app that just might have, you know, clicked your video on a hashtag list. How does that interaction differ, though? When you respond on social media, there is a level of discourse. There is kind of an expected kind of conversation. What does that conversation look like when somebody hits reply? Because I've got to admit, I have never considered hitting reply on a newsletter.
Oh, no. Oh, you know what? It's night and day difference. It's the difference of being in a loud party atmosphere where you know 50 other people are overhearing what you're yelling above the music at the person you're trying to talk to, versus sitting in a quiet cafe one-on-one and having a more detailed conversation. And social media, everybody's able to see, hear, chime in. It's not a private conversation. Email can be. So, you know, I send out an email and it's information. I usually add a personal tidbit. I put some information of value, some curated articles, links to other things, other content I've created that I think might be of value to my readers. And then when they respond, it opens up a one-on-one conversation. And I've had a lot of lovely conversations. I've had invitations to speak at events because of something in my newsletter. I've had invitations to take on clients, or I had one of my followers, an author who is also an accountant, and she responded with, I have two clients that really need marketing help.
Wow.
Can I send your newsletter to them? Yes, please. Absolutely. That's what we do. So, you know, you have that opportunity when you're really specific because you know who your audience is. You get good analytics from both the open rate and the click-through rate and seeing where they're clicking and what they're clicking on. You get way more analytics if you put all the pieces together than you would, say, just on Instagram analytics or just on Twitter analytics.
Right.
And LinkedIn gives you pretty much no analytics. So that's really not valuable unless you have a paid account as a business page.
Well, and LinkedIn's focus isn't selling. It is networking.
Oh, but it is, my friend. LinkedIn has changed. We got to have a whole episode on LinkedIn because I don't think people know that. Yeah. And LinkedIn has their own newsletter service or article service that you can link in with your newsletter. If you're on Twitter, they bought out Review, which you can do your newsletter completely through Review. And then there's Substack. So there's other options, and these are not your traditional ESPs. So that's a different thing. But we're going to be talking more about Substack later in the month because I have an author from England who is going to share that information with us. And Jolynn hooked us up. So yay there.
Yeah, he's a fantastic person. I'm really looking forward to the interview. Substack is probably my favorite source to get newsletters through right now. I get several through there, and it is a digital magazine. So it doesn't have a feeling of a letter from a distant cousin or something, you know, that we should be familiar with each other, but we're not. It's more of like, oh, I thought you'd like this, and I thought you'd like this. How do you decide which format is right for your audience?
So it goes back to the three rhetorical principles that I'm constantly talking about. What's your purpose? What is your purpose? Are you here just to sell? Are you here to build a community? Are you here to build relationships? Are you here to teach, to nurture, to engage? You know, figure out your purpose first before you do anything. That's really important before choosing an ESP or an email service provider.
Right.
You need to know what your purpose is, because while all of them do the job well, some are have different strengths that align with different purposes. So know that. Know your audience. Why are they signing up for this? You know, if they are just wanting to hear about your latest deals and specials, or where you're going to be speaking next month, or whatever, you know, you need to tailor your content to them. If they want to be entertained, maybe your newsletter includes flash fiction pieces. Maybe your newsletter includes your research that you found in a funny or humorous way. Maybe you are the next Irma Bombeck and you are writing more of a column to get everybody laughing. You know, each of those have different purposes, and each of those are going to attract a different audience, and each of those have different strengths and weaknesses on different platforms. So go back to, you know, what your purpose is, who your audience is, what your voice is going to be. Because if you don't have that clear as crystal, the rest is going to be muddied all the way through.
Right, right. So once you've gone back through your principles and you've decided on your purpose for this, whether you want to be very intimate and community building, or if you want to be a little bit more distance business-like, are there certain ESPs that are better suited for one or the other?
Absolutely. So I'm actually going to link in the show notes a recent article from Email Tool Tester. This is one of the nicer charts that I've seen. Email service providers, ESPs, also known as email marketing services, EMSs. You'll see those used interchangeably. This is different than your email client, okay? Your email client is your Gmail or your iMail or whatever you're using to get and receive your personal emails, right? That's your client. you need to make sure that you have a official email marketing service so that you don't get in trouble with the laws and protections in place regarding privacy. So when you go to the email tool tester, it breaks it down. I think he lists like 15 of the top ones, and he shows their strength, if there's a free option, what their weaknesses are, these kind of things. There's also a great articles from David Grogan. He does an updated thing regularly about email service providers. I think Joanna Penn also keeps hers up to date too. I really want to reinforce here too, where you're getting your information from, because it's so very important that you're listening to marketing experts who are talking about being a creative entrepreneur, not part of the creator economy, not a business email, because we're sending a business email, yes, but our purpose is different. The way we do it is different, and our needs are different. So if you're following somebody like Amy Porterfield, who is definitely a guru in the email marketing space, she recommends Constant Contact, but her regular audience are business builders who are doing affiliate marketing, who are doing courses, who are doing digital products. So that is not necessarily what we need. So I am currently recommending MailerLite. And the reason being, and this is not sponsored, although if anyone's listening, I'm open to sponsorships. This is not sponsored. I use MailerLite. I switched from MailChimp, also an excellent choice. But the reason I switched is because MailerLite did what I needed it to do without all the other stuff that MailChimp was trying to incorporate to be a one-stop shop. I did not want a one-stop shop. I wanted a mail service provider that had excellent deliverability. And that's a thing you got to look at. MailerLite is currently the top of all the providers as far as deliverability. So, you know, if your email that you spent time on sending out to your followers never gets to their inbox, that's a problem, right? And you assume just because you sent it, it's going to get through.
Yeah.
There are so many different firewalls and spam filters, both on the email service provider side as well as on the email client side. So make sure that you pick a service that has high deliverability.
And the resource we're going to put in the show notes will have that broken down.
Email tool tester, it does have, it also has links. It looks at, again, the pros and cons of which ones have free plans up to what the prices are. It shows that, it shows what each are known for. Some are known for their automation services, like ActiveCampaign has really great automated services. But if you're not one who wants to take time to set up all the automations, that doesn't mean anything to you.
Right.
Again, MailerLite, simplicity and design. You can create just gorgeous emails and newsletters, or you can do the real simple stuff, and they're all easy, and it lets you do templates. And I find MailerLite the most user-friendly for my needs. And it also allows you to have up to 1,000 contacts for $0 per month.
Okay.
So not all of them allow that. MailChimp lets you have 500 contacts for $13 a month. But one of the reasons I left MailChimp was because they changed how they charged. So for a number of years, you paid per subscriber, then you paid per open, and then you paid for something. They did a lot of changing for a while. I don't know if they've settled into a pattern. Again, I left MailChimp a couple of years ago. And there's others that maybe you're not as familiar with. Again, Constant Contact. ConvertKit is great for self-marketing. And then there's also, you know, the old standbys like AWeber, but that was set up for businesses back in the early days of email marketing. So again, if you have a traditional business, small business, AWeber may still be the go-to for you. So think about your purpose and what's important for you and your entrepreneur journey.
Okay. Now you touched on something I think isn't being given enough time, and that is that there are some legalities around who and when can be sent a newsletter.
Yes. So here in the US, the privacy laws are not very strict or clear. California has changed that with the CalOPA, Cal OPPA, which actually stands for the California Online Consumer Protection, Privacy Protection, sorry, Act, California Online Privacy Protection Act. And it basically says that you have to have a plan and a privacy statement. Wow. If you're sending out emails saying how you're going to use the information you collect. And that starts with the email address and the name of the subscriber. You have to have a plan for how you're going to handle that data, what you're going to use that data for, if you're going to encrypt that data, all those things. So most of us don't have the time or the wherewithal to think through all these things, right? That's why you need an email service provider, because they take care of that. Okay. A legitimate one is going to take care of that for you. They're going to protect and encrypt that data. So you still need to put something on your website, a privacy statement. Okay. If you have subscribers in California, and we have no way of knowing where our subscribers are coming from in a lot of instances. So you just, I think it's important to go ahead and prepare for the strictest of the rules, how you're doing this, right? So if you know you're a Texas writer and you're only going to have subscribers in Texas because you're doing a local thing, well, then maybe this isn't a big deal, right? The other thing to keep in mind, though, is we are now in a global economy, and most of us do have subscribers outside of the US. So that means you have to play with the rules that the other countries set up. So in the UK, they were one of the earliest to start thinking this through, and they have the Data Protection Act of 1998. And you can, again, we're going to put all these links in the show notes. You can read the actual acts themselves if you are a rules lawyer and want to play that game, or you can just find an article to summarize it all for you. I just want to make sure our listeners are aware that these things are for real. So legislation.gov.uk is going to share all of that information with you. And then the most stringent of these, and what you really want to be aware of, is the EU. Again, I'm dating myself, I've been doing this a long time. A few years ago, I don't know when a few was, but it could be three, it could be five, I don't know. The EU created the GDPR, and it like flipped email marketing on its head, because they were really serious about it, and they would shut you down if you did not play by their game.
Wow.
So that is a compliance. It requires encryption, and it is also assumed that you get an email service provider such as MailerLite, Constant Contact, ConvertKit, MailChimp, whatever, they're going to take care of a lot of these requirements for you. But the one thing you need to be aware of is that double opt-in, because most of these services are going to give you a choice. Do you want to have a double opt-in or not? The answer is always yes. If you think there is any possibility of having somebody from the European Union subscribe to your list, as remote as it might seem at the moment, you may go ahead and have them do a double opt-in. And for those of us that subscribe to newsletters, this is why. It's because there was too long of a stretch where people would just gather email addresses and stick them on their list, whether you wanted to hear from them or not. And the European Union said, no, we're not playing this game anymore. Not only do they have to subscribe to your list, but then you have to email them confirming that they intended to subscribe and it wasn't an accident. So that double opt-in is to protect them, but it also protects you. Because honest to goodness, if you're paying per subscriber, as you will, as you build your list, you don't want to be paying for people that don't want to be in, that aren't your ideal audience, that aren't going to read what you're sending. So it really protects both sides of the story.
So once we get all of our legal aspects taken care of, we need to start actually creating the newsletter. Let's talk strategy. Why do we need to start with a newsletter instead of a website? It kind of seems like cart before the horse.
I thought it was too, honestly. I set up my website first. And the reason you want to do your email first is because email has zero cost to get started, and it's fast and it's easy. And you can be collecting those addresses before you build your website.
Okay.
So as it takes time to build your website, as it takes time to promote your website, as you're figuring out all the things for the website, your email is already active. And you're collecting those addresses, whether or not you are already committed to sending out a weekly email, you can go ahead and start collecting addresses. So maybe your first email, you're already going to have 100 addresses because you put a sign up out on your table as you were doing a book signing, or you spoke at an event and you asked people to give you their email address. And then when you put it in the email system, it then does the double opt-in, so it's all confirmed and you know it goes through. You can do all that. The other thing is, most of the email service providers that we've been talking about provide landing pages for you.
Oh.
So you can set up a landing page. You can give your freebie, all of that, through your email provider. So you don't need to build a big website to get started. You can have a landing page for your book.
Oh, okay.
You can have a landing page for whatever freebie you decide to give away, if you decide to give away one. So all that, and you don't have to pay for the URL. You don't have to pay for any of it. So if you are looking for a frugal way to get started, email newsletter is the first step. And the purpose of social media, most people do social media first, I guess because they think it's the easiest. But the thing is, the point of social media is to drive people to your newsletter list, your email list, or to drive people to your website. So if you don't have your email set up, where are you driving people? What's your purpose? And again, it always goes back to purpose, because there's only three reasons to build content. You're either lead generating, lead nurturing, or lead conversion. That's it. It all comes down to those three things. So if you don't have any place to send people to do those things, what's the point of your social media? And newsletter does all three for free as you get started.
Right. Okay. So when you're first starting out, before you have your website and you just have your ESP and your landing page, and you start off with that list on your table at your book events, is that the only strategy pre-website to build your list? Are there other strategies we need to be aware of?
I would definitely look at an email sequence. You want your 0-day welcome, which is the moment they subscribe. You want to send them their first email because they're looking for it already, right?
Right.
That is the one that gets the highest open rate. And you really want to make sure to include in that welcome email something that they can click through to. Click through rate is hugely important, because a lot of, like, the new Apple program, the iOS, is not giving us the open rates anymore.
Oh, wow.
So you want to look at the click through rates. You also want to see where they're clicking, because you can mesh together the analytics. Say if you send them to a social media source, maybe you send them to your Amazon author page. Maybe you do have a website up already and you send them to a blog post. You can see on your website when they come, where they're coming from. So it's nice to see that this new person who just signed up is interested in blog posts. This new person that signed up is interested in my podcast. So it gives you a little more understanding about who your audience is and where they are. And then that click-through rate also lets their client, their email client, be it Gmail or Outlook or whoever it is, say that, oh, this is something they want. This isn't spam. They're interacting with it. Let's consider this for real. You also want to make sure in that welcome email that you give them an opportunity to either respond, ask them a question to respond to, hit reply and tell me, I want to get to know you, hit reply and tell me whatever is relevant to your brand, right? Or you want to ask them to put you in as a contact. That will make sure that they don't get trapped in the firewall or the spam filter.
Right.
You can also set up an automated sequence. And I know other people have talked about sequences, but remember what your purpose is when you're listening to advice from all the gurus, right? So what is your purpose? Are you wanting to show them where they can find your flash fiction? Are you wanting to show them where they can buy your book? Are you wanting to show them what other community you have set up? These are all important things to add into your welcome sequence. And some suggest 3 emails, some suggest 5 emails. The automated sequence you can make as elaborate as you want or as simple as you want, but make sure you at least have one welcome email that will automatically go out.
What are some strategies that we can use to build up the list beyond just sign-up sheet?
Okay, so when I got started, I definitely took a sign-up sheet with me wherever I went. If I was presenting in public, if it was a small group, whatever, you know, don't forget to use your social media. Everybody has a Facebook page. So definitely make sure you let friends and family know, just to get you started and to give you some feedback. So obviously my mother is not my ideal audience. She is not a reader, but she loves me and she will like everything. Just because she knows that that helps with the algorithm. She also will send me a note when I send out my emails. And it's like, why don't you proof these before I hit send, Mom? She always finds that one typo or the one misspoken word, right? So, but I know it goes out, right? If I send out something and my mother doesn't respond, that's my first tip that there's a problem in the system and I need to go check the settings. So it's valuable, especially as you're starting to get your besties and your family members or whoever might be supporting you to do that. It's also important then to add it to your social media link in bio. I really encourage folks to do some sort of link in bio. The best, once you have a website, set up a links page on your website. That way you get all the data and the analytics and the SEO coming to your website rather than going to Linktree or someplace else. Now, if you don't have a website yet, you can do that through Metricool for free. Again, not sponsored, but hey, people, I'm open. So there's options of how to do that. But if you're only putting your website email in your LinkedIn bio, that doesn't give people all the options, you know, to sign up to all the other things or see where you're active in the other places. Because if they only found you on Instagram, how do they know where else you're active? So I have accounts on pretty much every platform, both traditional and not traditional. You can find me on the Fediverse. You can find me, you know, wherever. But I am most active on Twitter, LinkedIn, and Instagram. So those are the links I want in my bio, because although you might find me elsewhere and I'm elsewhere for my clients because I do digital media marketing, that's not my happy place. So my happy place is where I want to interact with folks. The other thing to remember is if and when you have your website set up, make sure that your email subscription link or bar or box or pop-up, however you set that up to do it, that has to be on the front page, preferably above the fold. And that's old news newspaper speak. Above the fold means on the front page on the screen. So if they have to scroll down to find it, it's not above the fold. It needs to be on that front screen. So again, when you're designing your website, if you do a hero box at the top and you have it filled with an image that doesn't have any content, that's not what we're doing as authors and for our type of business. That's really good for people like Tesla. You know, when the image of the car is the most important thing that they have to sell their car, that's when you want those huge hero page pictures. But if you're trying to build your community, you're trying to get conversion and take care of your people, you need to make sure that your subscription box is front and center when they open your page. And also consider that the majority of people are going to be scrolling that on their mobile phones, not on their desktops or laptops. So make sure it's also above the fold, if you will, on that front screen on your mobile device.
I think the worst sign up box I've ever seen was I had to go to their contact us page to find a newsletter subscription box. I mean, I get the logic, but at the same time, I was very motivated to get in contact with this company.
Most people aren't.
But it was not the norm. That was for this particular company.
I always recommend they put in multiple places on your website, because honest to goodness, people have really short attention spans. And half the time, by the time they found it, they forgot why they wanted to sign up, right? So if you have too much friction, if they have to click more than two or three times, they're not going to do it. They're off on something else, or their kids called, or, you know, whatever, they got to go. So make it easy. So put it above the fold on your homepage. Also, put it in the bottom menu. I love it when I see websites that when you scroll all the way to the bottom, it automatically has that box. You also have the option of putting in your contact page. I think that's brilliant. I think those are three places it should be. And that's also if you use a pop-up window. A lot of people will click out of the pop-up window, and please, folks, don't have your pop-up coming up every 10 seconds. I don't know who invented that, but there is a special circle of hell for them, I'm sure. If I have clicked off of more websites because the pop-up was so stinking annoying. But you definitely want to make it easy, but you don't want to make it annoying. Another thing to add as far as where to promote your list or your subscription page, a lot of us are still doing business cards. I like it with the QR code on the business card, and the QR code I recommend is the one that links to that links page or smart links or Linktree or whatever, where they get all the options. It doesn't take them to just one place. And the other thing that a lot of people have started doing, I've started doing, is on my lock screen, I have my QR code, because you don't know how many times I go out and somebody asks for my contact information and I don't have a business card with me, or they don't have a pocket to put it in, but everybody's got their phone. So I just pull up my lock screen. They don't get any other information but my cute background and my QR code. They can put their phone against it right there. They have all my information to do with as they will.
Wow, that is really, really clever. It's also eco-friendly, considering how long does somebody really keep a business card?
Yeah, when I get home from an event and I have business cards, I scan them into a CRM and then I throw them away. So the nice thing is with scanning, I can get the notes that I had on the back as well. I still carry business cards, but I get the most basic with the plain background because I tend to use it when I leave notes for somebody. So I have something to write on and they know who it came from and how to get a hold of me. But use that QR code to your advantage and make sure your newsletter subscription page or your landing page is on your QR code.
Yeah, I've loved QR codes. I had to do a fundraiser once and I put a QR code on the flyer. And I think in my small town, that was the first time some people had ever seen a QR code, but we got lots of comments on it.
So the silver lining of COVID is every restaurant in the US at least had a QR code on the table, so you didn't have to touch the menu. So it's silly of us not to take advantage of the fact that the restaurant industry has already trained the public how to use QR codes.
Right. Now everybody knows what a QR code is. That is so true.
Yes. You know, it's funny too. So my mom's in her 80s and she is as techie as they come, right? I can't buy this honestly, but she'll get to a restaurant ahead of us and she'll pull up the QR code and then she'll text me the link so I can look at the menu in the car on the way to meet her at the restaurant. So I just think it's brilliant. And if my 80 something year old mother can make this work, y'all have no excuse.
Tell me you have food limitations without telling me you have food limitations.
Yeah, exactly. I'm vegan. And she's always like, do they have something you can eat here?
Right. For us, it's always, is there something gluten-free? Yeah. Is that even mentioned on the menu? And that's one of those things that's just made life so much easier. And it's just one of those small changes. And I feel like that principle can be applied to so many things. Tiny changes, big impact. What is something that you feel that way about email marketing, that just if somebody could just adjust a little thing, it makes a big difference in their click-throughs, in their engagement?
Number one thing is stop using it like old school newspaper or radio or TV advertising. Your newsletter is not for advertising. It's for building Discord dialogue communication community. Treat it as a letter to your BFF.
Right. When I was in radio class in college, they always told us to imagine a person that, like, think about eye color, hair color, imagine a friend if you wanted to, and talk to them. So you had that warm conversational tone. I'm guessing that applies when you are writing your email. Also, to say your ideal reader seems kind of cold, how do you make that personal?
It's exactly right. And again, my argument is if we are creative authors and we are doing character bios anyways, we should be at the top of our game when it comes to imagining our ideal client. Give that person a name, give them a gender, give them eye color, give them a favorite TV show, give them musical preferences. You know, just imagine who that person is. And you can look at your ongoing analytics for your social media if you already have that to help you determine who your ideal client is. But it could be that your ideal client isn't who's following you. Maybe you need to tweak that information. Mm-hmm. So if your ideal client is a 30-something, talk to them like they're a 30-something-year-old person. What are they watching on TV? Are they watching Twitch instead of TV? You know, need to know what you have in common and reference those kind of things, right? So if my ideal audience is in their 80s, I'm going to be referencing things that they care about. Mm-hmm. If my ideal audience is teenagers, I'm going to be referencing what they care about because that's that cultural. And it's also your voice expectations, right? Right. So you can say the exact same thing. What did you do last night? Okay, that's the question. So how are you going to answer that if your four-year-old asks you? How are you going to answer that if your BFF asks you? How are you going to answer that if your husband asks you? How are you going to answer that if your mother asks you? It's the same information. You're not lying. Right. You're just choosing a different tone of voice, a different amount of details that you're giving. You know, you're not going to tell your four-year-old that you drank too much while you were out with your girlfriends at a bachelorette party, right?
Right.
You probably aren't going to tell your mother that either, but your husband's going to be the one holding your hair back while you're in the bathroom the next morning, right?
Right.
So you give them the information they need, they want, they expect, right?
Yeah. That makes total sense. And I think that is the best analogy I've ever heard on how to tailor to different audiences. So when we're looking at creating the content to go into our newsletter, what should the aim be when we're creating that piece? I mean, we have our pillars, we have our audience. Are we doing funny stories? Are we doing event follow-ups?
Could be all the above. Okay, so here's the thing. You figured out your purpose, you know your voice. Are you writing humorous sci-fi? Mm-hmm. If so, your audience is going to expect some funny stories. If you're the next Irma Bombeck, they're going to expect something humorous from you or mm-hmm. a taste of life with a switch. If you're known to be very sentimental and very self-help type books, then you definitely want to use that tone of voice, right? I actually had this question just a couple hours ago from Elaine Canyon, and she asked me, how do I know what to write when I don't have my book out yet?
Right.
And that is the exact same question. It doesn't matter if you have your book out yet or not. What is it that is going to draw readers to your books? Mm-hmm. If you were writing historical fiction, I can pretty much guarantee you they're interested in history. So maybe in your newsletter, you put some tidbits that you found in your research and maybe some links to a museum or whatever that you discovered that's on topic, but isn't going to make its way into your book, right? Because mm-hmm. we can't put everything we learn right. in our stories. So maybe some of that extra stuff. Oh, guys, I went down a rabbit hole of research because I discovered about the Germans from Russia at the North Dakota University. Mm-hmm. And that's not going to make it in my story. But when you read my story, you'll see how this relates, you know, and then share the link. The information should be original. It should have some original components because you want to connect with them. If you're writing, say, sweet romance for married people, not YA, maybe you want to write in your newsletter some marriage advice or links to marriage advice. So do you know that Gary Smalley, most of us who are married have seen his 5 love languages book?
Right.
Well, there's now the 5 argument languages, how to argue fair with your spouse. So those of us who have been married more than a hot minute, mm-hmm. we've argued and we've realized there's, you know, different ways of doing that, some more productive than others, but this is really eye-opening. So it might save you some time on the marriage counseling couch. So it's one of those things, figure out what you're writing about, what your themes are, mm-hmm. and what is drawing people to your stories or what will draw people to your stories, and then make sure that you follow up on those themes in your newsletters.
So leaning into your genre, the expectations of your genre, and then while staying on brand, showing a little bit of your personality and how you relate with the information and with the topics and themes. I always was intimidated because I felt like I had to write several newspaper articles or several magazine articles. But it sounds like it is maybe one long form piece if you blog, a couple of interesting tidbits, and maybe just a little personal note of, hey, this is what I've got going on. This is what I've got coming up.
And you can mix and match those. So Tim Ferriss, known for the 4-Hour Workweek and a number of other books, he started his out with his friends, and his email was simply 5 things I like this week. And it could be a thing he's reading, a quote he's thinking about, something he's listening to, whatever. It's his 5 things. Now he has a gazillion followers, and he still sends out his Friday 5 things.
Right.
Okay, so yeah, it doesn't have to be that elaborate, or maybe you mix and match it. So what my goal is, the first of the month, I do Unleashing That Month newsletter, and I set it up as a more old school newsletter, right? I've got sections, there's 5 different types of things I'm talking about. I give social media tips and tricks. I give, you know, what's going on in my world, a quote that I'm thinking about, expound on that. And I list podcast episodes, upcoming or recent, those kind of things. So all of that is in my more formal first of the month newsletter. But then during the month, I might send out just a quick note to a segmented part of my audience. So if I have people that are following me for this, I send them a quick note, maybe on week 1, week 2, I send a different group a week note, maybe mid-month I send a, hey, how y'all doing? Here's what I'm encouraged about. Let me encourage you to do whatever, you know, so you can mix and match. There's not one right way to do your newsletter. The only thing I really wish people would hold as sacred is that they're going to send a newsletter out. If you say you're going to send it out once a month, send it out once a month. If you say you're going to send it out once a week, send it out once a week. It's big or small, but send it, because consistency is almost more important than content. Content's king, but consistency is right up there with it.
Right.
So that's one of the things I see a lot of people, they get excited about, they get it started, and then they don't follow through, and that will erode your trust.
It's easier to scale up than it is to pare down. So
exactly.
Start small, manageable, reasonable expectations, and then grow as you can. Now, you mentioned something interesting. You said you send emails to certain segments. I'm assuming this is a feature that the ESPs will provide.
Correct.
How do you decide which segments get what?
Okay, so a lot of the authors listening are going to have this situation. They have those that follow them that are readers that are interested in what they're writing, their upcoming novels. So they are speaking to them one way, but then maybe they have a associated business. Maybe they're also doing editing, or they're also doing graphic design or covers. So whatever that other business is, maybe people are already authors, not interested in reading their books, but interested in working with them as a service provider. So maybe the first of the month, they send a larger, more generic email that's applicable to all the above. And then maybe mid-month, they send a small email just to their readers and a small email just to the other authors.
Okay. How do you find who is who in the ESP?
So you can set that up as with your lead magnets. That's a great way.
Okay.
So you can create a lead magnet that specifically will attract a certain type of follower. And then when they sign up under that lead magnet, it will automatically segment them. So you can have a lead magnet for readers that might be a piece of flash fiction or an opening chapter. You might have a lead magnet for whatever service you provide that does something else for that audience. So that's one way to create it. You can also go in afterwards and group them. So there's different ways to do that. And most email service providers will offer a tutorial system. So MailerLite has what they call MailerLite Academy, and it takes you through step by step little 2 to 5 minute videos. You need to know how to do this. Here's how you do this. And if you're a nerd like me, you watch it from beginning to end. You do all the homework, you test the test, all the things. If you just need an answer to your question, you just go in and get that answer.
Right.
So I think most providers will do that. And if it's not embedded in their system, there's always YouTube, and you can always find somebody who can illustrate how to do that.
YouTube certified marketers.
Yes. Yes. Which is why I am getting ready to start a YouTube channel, just throwing that out. So we will have more announcements about that later.
Good things are coming to the Unleashing Yes. family of services. It is that time, Catherine, for our Fast Fave 3, but we know what our Fast Fave 3 is. So what are 3 things that you're drinking, reading, and what plant are you trying to keep alive this month?
I am currently drinking water because I have learned that some of those mouth noises when we're podcasting is because I'm dehydrated. Mm. So thank you for whoever shared that tip. I am drinking much more water. But I found at the Stockyards, there is a tea shop that has awesome teas. And if anyone visits the Fort Worth Stockyards, it's a tourist trap. I'm here to tell you, but there's a little kitchen shop in there that it's teas and spices.
Okay.
And it smells divine. Even my post-COVID lack of smell, I could smell it. And I found a black tea with apricot and ginger.
Ooh, that sounds delightful.
It is lovely. So drinking a lot of that. As far as what plant I'm trying to keep alive, I think my Hoya australis, it is grown and vined everywhere, but wonderful. I'm starting to lose leaves, like they're turning yellow and dropping. So I'm thinking it's time to repot. It's spring repotting session. I think that's the case. But me and my Hoyas are getting along really well, and I have a chain of hearts that is growing like a weed here.
I need you to give me a masterclass on Hoyas because I kill every single one that I get.
I think Hoyas like benign neglect. I think that's why we get along so well. They like to dry out completely in between waterings, and the taco test is the key. So if you can pinch their leaves and they fold like tacos, you know they need water. If they are firm and semi-succulent, you know they're fine. Let them go. So that's the deal with Hoyas. And apparently the chain of hearts is a relative of the Hoya family, so they are treated the same. So apparently that's why I'm doing okay with those.
Good to know.
And then what am I reading right now? I am still working on The Way of the Kings by Brandon Sanderson.
Okay.
And I know we talked about that a while ago. Mm-hmm. It is a fantasy story. It is a huge epic fantasy with multiple books in the series. Mm-hmm. And it took me a while to get into it, but I am so deep down that rabbit hole. So between that and my Dungeon Master's DM guide, I've been reading a lot because, you know, we have fun things coming in our D&D game.
Yeah. Our private life does have to get in there somewhere. Right. You can't just be marketing all the time.
Here's a response. If y'all want to let us know, I don't know that we've discussed this, but I'd be curious to see what people think you play and what people think I play.
Oh, that would be interesting.
Yeah, we play in the same game. And Jolynn has also DM'd her own game. I sat in on one of those and I played a different character. But our main characters right now are a lot of fun and we're creating our own fantasy world. So those of you that write fantasy discovered a lot of fun things through D&D.
Maybe we need to make a D&D subgroup in the Discord group.
Oh, hey, that would be fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Talk about world building tools, because we've talked about that a little bit, World Anvil and whatnot. Catherine, I feel like we just scratched the surface of your knowledge on email marketing. We could probably do a part two on this.
So here's what we're going to do instead. I am putting together a email webinar that you can get for free when you sign up for my email subscription. So it will be the freebie, the opt-in, whatever you want to call it. So if you want to learn more, that is an option. We will also be interviewing a few other people about email marketing in the coming weeks. And the YouTube channel that we will be starting in the next week or so, it might even be live by the time you listen to this, will also have more information about email marketing, because I really think it's that important and I'm going to hit it hard. And again, in the Discord community, if you have questions or you want to get face to face with me, I do drop in office hours Wednesdays at 2 p.m. You don't need to make an appointment. You don't need to pay me. Just drop in and pick my brain. I'm there for an hour. Whether you're there or not, I'm there. And if nobody shows up, I just use that to work on my own projects.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Catherine, for sharing your knowledge with us.
Thanks for playing with me.
Thanks for listening today. Ready to up your authorpreneur game? Authorpreneursunleashed.com/podcast has all the resources you need. Follow us on your favorite podcast platform and sign up for the Unleashing newsletter for even more useful tools and tips. Tune in next episode when Catherine will be going off script with her interview of Dominic Rolandelli. He's a filmmaker and movie editor who'll be giving insights into how visual storytelling and editing techniques may apply in creative projects like yours.